On page 345, 346, the top of the page, the middle of Igeret Teshuva. In these first chapters, the Alter Rebbe explains what is Teshuva according to Nigla, according to the Gemara and Halacha. In the middle chapters, he explains according to Kabbalah, and in the end chapters, he explains it according to Chassidus. So, that being the case, then, what we have today, what the Alter Rebbe is going to explain, is going to be what is referred to in the jargon as a pilpul. A pilpul is a homiletic exegesis expounding a subject. And it's all on the word mitzvah. As he says right on the top, just to what did he say till now, is tshuva is required anytime a person either doesn't do what he's supposed to do or does something that he's not supposed to do. Okay, if a person didn't put on tefillin, didn't do a positive commandment, he has to feel bad and Hashem forgives him even before he moves. If a person did something wrong, so he's got Yom Kippur. If a person does something heinous, so then he's got death and afflictions. So the now at the top of the page, so he says, "Hine mitzvah tshuva min ha-Torah hu azivas ha-chet bilvad." The commandment, the mitzvah of doing teshuva, counted as one of the 613 commandments, according to the Torah, without any of the rabbinic trappings, is to stop sinning. And he brings quotes a footnote. Could easily be Gemara, Paragimel, the Sanhedrin of Urchalshin Mishpat, Simon Lamidal, Lanian Aedis. As it is discussed in the Gemara, third chapter of Sanhedrin, which talks about how to run a court case, and Chalshin Mishpat, which is a Shulchan Aruch, chapter 34, which talks about the laws of witnesses. The Alter Rebbe generally does not quote footnotes in the text.
Okay.
And so if the Alter Rebbe is quoting a footnote in the text, there's something that we need to talk about.
Yes.
Okay? And this, we have to talk about the word mitzvah tshuva. Igeret tshuva is not halacha. It's philosophy. The Tanya is a philosophy book. And the Alter Rebbe did write a halacha book called the Shulchan Aruch, yes. Were it a philosophy book, meaning that this is a philosophy book, so what the Alter Rebbe should have said to start off this section explaining teshuvah is not the word mitzvah teshuvah. He should have said something like inyan ha-teshuvah, the concept of tshuva, or just said the word tshuva. What's tshuva? He just said, ma tshuva, tshuva is azivas achet. What is he emphasizing here when he puts in the word mitzvahs ha-tshuva? Okay, so, there is a discussion. If I would be like a real proper Rav type thing, I'd have my big books out here, because there is a discussion which involves the Rambam, which is one big book, and the Shulchan Aruch, which he quotes, which is another big book, and the Minchas Chinuch, which is a third big book.
I'm picturing it though.
Okay, imagine that these books, big books, I didn't bother taking them off the shelf because these books are big, you know. So there's a joke that a man goes to a shotgun and says, I need a shidduch for my daughter. So he says, I have a carpenter for you. He says, no, I'm not going to. I would never have my daughter marry a carpenter. He says, why? He says, when he's going to get mad at her, he's going to throw a hammer at her. So he says, oh, okay, fine, you know, so I have a plumber. He says, no. I understand, I'm not going to have a plumber for a son-in-law. He's going to get mad at her. He's going to throw a wrench at her. Says, okay, how about a tailor? He says, no, he's going to get mad, he's going to throw his scissors at her. He says, okay, I got a yeshiva bacher. He says, a yeshiva bacher? He's going to get mad at her, he's going to throw a gemara at her. He says, that you'll have no worries about. Okay, these are big books. Big books, and they sit on the shelf. Anyway, so, I'm just joking. So, that is the joke. If you tell it in Yiddish, it sounds better. Right. It might actually be funny in Yiddish. Yeah. But there is a discussion as to what is tshuva. It says over here, this idea of azivas achet is not what it says in either Sanhedrin or in Choshen Mishpat. Where does this idea of azivas achet come from? Azivas achet, of stopping to sin, as being the idea of teshuva, is in Rambam. In the second chapter, the second law of Hilchos Tshuva. So if you look in Hilchos Tshuva, base, there he says that the mitzvah of tshuva is la'azav esachet, to aziv esachet, and he quotes a pasuk, yazav rasha darchei, that the wicked person should leave his way. Now this is a very strange, they asked the question on the Rambam, this is a very strange verse to be quoting to prove that a mitzvah is a mitzvah. Because in order for something to be a mitzvah, it has to be from the Chumash. The pasuk Yazav Rosh Darko is from Yeshaya. The pasuk that we know that tshuva is a mitzvah is V'shafta ad Hashem Elokecha. You should return to Hashem Elokecha. A pasuk in Dvarim, which says simply you have to do tshuva. You have to return to Hashem. That's the pasuk there. So why is it that the Rambam quotes a pasuk from Nach rather than a pasuk from Chumash, which is where we know that this mitzvah is?
Yeah.
Okay? And if you look at, that's in the Rambam. If you look at Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Rambam says over there the idea of what's tshuva, and there he says the mitzvah of tshuva is neither one of these things. It's vidui. Confession. As he quotes a pasuk over there, lihis vadis lel Hashem, to confess to Hashem. So there he doesn't talk about azivas achet at all. He doesn't quote Yazav Rasha Darkai. He says that you have to do vidui.
And that's with the Rambam sources, though. That's a tough one.
Well, you would think, well, Rambam doesn't quote his sources. For that, you have to look at this book that I worked on when I was in Kiel that the Rebbe insisted that we make, called the Meir Mekumis L'Sefer HaYad HaZaka. And we had to go find all of the footnotes, because the Rambam actually left it as such that he's sorry that he didn't put footnotes in, but since he was writing the Rambam when he was on the run, he didn't have his books with him, and he was doing it all from memory. Hello. And he did not want to trust himself to start quoting sources lest he quote a wrong source. So he remembered what it said exactly, but he didn't remember exactly what page it was on. Okay, so the
good healthy days.
Okay, tell you, and I don't know how he would have quoted a Gemara, because in the 1200s, in the 1200s, there was no standard pagination, because the printing press hadn't been invented yet.
Yeah, how would you? Yeah.
So. Yeah. So how do you go? You know, you say in the middle of the third Mishnah of the second parak of Masechta, what do you call it?
Yeah.
Okay, which would be in our case any one of like maybe up to 5-10 pages.
Right.
You know, so he left it up for, you know, until 1984. Somebody like the Rebbe said demanded that the Maamar Mekumis be made. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the Rebbe explains. What does it say in? Let me answer the question about the pasuk first.
Okay.
So the pasuk Yazav Rasha Darko says he has to leave. The word, the expression, even though it's only from Yeshaya, is written in the imperative tense, that the wicked person must leave his way. There's no equivocation in that pasuk.
Right.
The pasuk that's quoted in Parshas Veschanan is a storyline. It's words that Moshe is saying.
Uh-huh.
It's like a pep talk that he's giving. And it's not written with the same emphasis and force. Therefore, the Rambam quotes the pasuk Yazav Rasha Darko, that the Rasha has to leave the way, to give the emphasis of how important it is that
task.
A person does do tshuva. What does it say in Hilchoshen Mishpat concerning Eidus? It says over there that a Rasha is disqualified from being an aide.
Yeah.
He's not allowed to give testimony in a court of law. A person who is a known Russia. Now, what is it? Most of us are not known Russias. What does it mean, a known Russia? So the list, the Mishnah lists over there, a person who is a professional gambler. A person who raises homing pigeons. Because homing pigeons are trained to steal things from other people's property. Oh. Okay. A person who lends money on interest.
Uh-huh. To Jews.
To Jews. Okay, well, the Mishnah lists such individuals.
Someone's public openly violating
Torah. Openly violating such things, and is not, you know...
Right.
So, and the Rambam says over there, so these people are all disqualified from being... From the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, explain what does it mean over there? How do we know? When is it that this person can now be trusted to give aidus? Since this person, for example, is a professional gambler. A professional gambler is a thief with your permission. Okay, because why are you gambling? You're gambling hoping to get his money.
Right.
And why is he gambling? Hoping he's gambling to get your money.
Right.
You don't want to lose your money.
Right.
But because you agree that if such and such happens, that you'll give him your money, you don't want to give him your money, so he's taking your money under duress. That's called, in English, a thief.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing it right in front of you with your permission.
Right.
So there's, technically speaking, there is nothing wrong with recreational, casual gambling. If you want to go to the casino and blow a couple of bucks, that's actually, it's okay.
Yeah.
You won't catch me doing it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you want to buy a raffle ticket in the Shalom Wayne raffle,
yeah, what about
that's fine. Okay? That's not called
So lottery tickets are okay.
Lottery tickets are fine. The disqualification, what disqualifies a person is if they have no other livelihood.
Oh, so the guys that go to the horse...
The guys that are, like, really into it. Okay? I know a family in New Jersey I was very close with.
Mm-hmm.
And when the casinos opened up in Atlantic City, they just had a heyday. Because these guys were really smart. And they were really good at poker. And they're playing the odds and counting cards and watching what was going on. Mm-hmm. And these guys would go down to Atlantic City once a month. And they would win $3,000 to $5,000 every time they went.
Wow.
And it got to the point where one guy quit his day job.
Well, I worked at Northfield Downs for the shul.
Yes.
We make a lot of money just running not running the tables, but exchanging cash.
Right.
And the team's kosher. We're not part of the gambling.
Gotcha.
But there's the same guy. I had to sit there for a week. I was out of work, so I had a chance to work during the day. And there were the same guys coming in every day. Short shirts, you know, very casual. And they're just loaded. They were exchanging $1,000 in their chips every day in and day out.
And they were probably losing, though. But
you couldn't tell. They just seemed to keep coming.
Uh-huh.
And I thought,
like I said, this guy got to the point.
This is what they do.
This guy got to the point
where
he would go.
They come in.
He would go to there's like a half a dozen casinos, and he would go every 3 weeks to a different casino mm-hmm. on the weekend, and he would make $3,000 to $5,000 every 3 weeks. So that was enough for him to live on. What is it? I have to work, and he didn't work. During the week, he did whatever he did. He had participated in his hobbies and avocations. That person is disqualified for being a witness, from being an aide in a Jewish court of law.
Okay.
Wow.
So the Gemara asks, the guy wants to do tshuva. He wants to be considered a kosher guy. Nobody wants to be told, you're not kosher.
Right.
It's a big slap in the face, a punch and pun him. So he has to show us that he did tshuva. So this is, when is it that this guy becomes kosher? So it says, for example, a gambler, he has to break his dice.
Mm-hmm.
If he breaks his dice, it's an indication he's not going to do it anymore.
Uh-huh.
And the person who raises pigeons has to let all the pigeons go and smash the dovecotes.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who lends on interest has to be shown that he publicly that he does not lend on interest. These type of things. There has to be some kind of a public action.
Right.
Universal.
Yeah. So there's nothing there about remorse. Mm-mm. Or... Mm-mm. It's just...
180 degrees.
It's not even a zivas achet. What it is just... It's a Kabbalah alahaba. I resolve I'm not going to do this anymore.
Right.
Mm. Okay? So, therefore, the way that it's explained is that the mitzvah of tshuva can be looked at in different ways. Is it... The Minchas Chinuch does not say that... The Minchas Chinuch does not count tshuva as one of the mitzvahs of the Torah. And he quotes over there... Like the Rebbe does, that the mitzvah Shavta Hashem Elokecha is just story. It's not a commandment. Mm-hmm. That if a person does something wrong, a person has 248 positive commandments and 365 negative commandments, and if he mucks up on one of those, he has to correct it. That's not a mitzvah. It's a correction of a wrongdoing.
Right.
So the Minchas Chinuch says there's no commandment to do that. You have to do the right thing. You did the wrong thing. Stop doing the wrong thing. Start doing the right thing.
An obligation.
Right. Your obligation is the 613 commandments, and tshuva is not a commandment. Tshuva is to get you to do the 613 commandments.
Right.
Okay? You have a similar thing with an argument between the Rambam and the Ramban about belief in God. The Ramban says there is no mitzvah to believe in God. Right. We talked about this when I think, Bishar Yochid V'amona. Because he said, how are you going to do any of the commandments if you don't believe in God? How could you command somebody to believe in God and do all the commandments and have believing God be one of the commandments? Believing in God has to be a precursor to the commandments. We talked about this before. Yeah, it has to be way before. So the Rambam calls it mitzvah number one, and Ramban calls it probably what we refer to as mitzvah number zero. It's the precursor to do the mitzvahs. It's not a mitzvah, it's a precursor. So the Nechaz Chinuch counts... does not count tshuva as one of the 613 commandments, but it puts it in a situation that if the situation arises that a person did something wrong, they have to correct what they did wrong so that they can be considered doing the 613 commandments. Mm-hmm. Then there's another way of looking at it. We could say that the mitzvah of teshuva is a mitzvah klalis. And the Rambam talks about mitzvah klalim, klaliyos, in his introduction to Sefer HaMitzvahs, which is quite long and extensive, and between you and me, boring, because it gives all the rules of what's a mitzvah, what's not a mitzvah, how do I count a mitzvah, how do I not count a mitzvah, and it gets really, really into it. I've actually taught two classes in Sefer HaMitzvahs, and we went through the Kalalim, and I've gone through the Kalalim twice, and those people who do Sefer HaMitzvahs on a yearly basis, as the Rebbe requests, that there's three different ways of doing Rambam, either three prakim a day, or one perek a day, or to do Sefer HaMitzvahs. So the people who do Sefer HaMitzvahs do the Klalim every year. All, I don't know, what is it, 9 chapters, 14 chapters, whatever it is, and I say more power to them. Because I would rather do 3 chapters a whole year than have to sit and plow through those Klalim in the course of a week, which is what the cycle says. Okay? So the Rambam says in Shorash Dalet, in the fourth section of his preamble to Sefer Mitzvahs, which the Sefer Mitzvahs is a preamble to the Yad HaChazakah, that there's such a thing called a mitzvah klalius, and that tshuva is something which affects all mitzvahs, being that it is a mitzvah klalius. And it's not a mitzvah that is incumbent upon a person. And he says that, for example, gives the example of a get. You do not have a mitzvah to give your wife a get.
Right.
If it is that a person wants to get divorced, and the conditions are made for the divorce, and they want to go and marry somebody else, so then he has a mitzvah to give a get. So the mitzvah of giving the get is only under certain specific conditions. I got news for you. You, according to Nigla, according to Halacha, you should never have to do tshuva.
Right.
If you don't do anything wrong, you're never going to have to do tshuva.
Right.
And therefore, you will have never done the mitzvah of teshuva. And you know what? When you get to heaven after 120 years, and they'll say to you, you didn't do the mitzvah of teshuva. Bravo!
Exactly.
You know?
No complaints.
This is fine. That's the way the Rambam looks at it.
To do it, though.
You have no obligation to do the mitzvah of teshuva if you didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
That's the way the Rambam looks at it.
You never had any obligation.
No.
Okay.
Excludes me.
Then, well, I'm not, my collar is,
I don't have
my collar is faced the right way. I don't do confessions.
Any worries about that.
Okay. So, then you could say that the mitzvah of the, which is the way the Alter Rebbe holds, that the mitzvah of teshuva is a mitzvah pratis. Mm-hmm. It is a specific mitzvah, and just like it is, that the 613 commandments are divided into 248 limbs of the king. Mm. All the positive commandments are 248 limbs of the king. So too also, the mitzvah of tshuva should therefore be counted as one of the 248 limbs of the king, and it has a specific limb. And where is its specific limb? Its specific limb is in the heart. Because where is it that a person is supposed to do tshuva? Correct. Now, the mitzvah of tshuva therefore can be broken into different factions. You have tshuva in thought, tshuva in speech, and tshuva in deed. Indeed. What's tshuva in thought? Tshuva in thought is I feel really bad that I did such a thing.
Right.
That's a heartfelt expression that is expressed internally, entirely, and completely. That's why it says, for example, in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchus Tainus, in the laws of public fast days, he says over there that if a person fasts on a public fast day, but spends his time during the fast day taking strolls in the park, engaging in fun things, he has grasped the secondary thing and forgotten the most important part. Because what is the purpose of the fast days that we fast is because something terrible happened and we need to have this feeling of needing to correct it. So that's a heartfelt feeling. Then there's the mitzvah of vidui, which is in the mouth, which a person has to utter, physically say, I did this sin. Which that we do on Yom Kippur, and that doesn't have to be done. It has to be loud enough for you yourself to hear. In other words, it's loud enough that Hashem knows you're saying it.
But you can do it any day.
You can say vidoy, yeah. Any day except when there's no tachnun, yes. So. You can say the al chet.
Yes.
Okay? Yeah. And a person on his deathbed says al chet regardless of what day of the week it is. So there the person is doing tshuva with their mouths through speech. So we have thought and we have speech. And then now when it comes over here, the Alter Rebbe quotes, because this isn't talking about, the Alter Rebbe is calling it mitzvah tshuva. That the Alter Rebbe is of the opinion that tshuva is a specific mitzvah.
Right.
And therefore, he calls it mitzvah tshuva, not inyan tshuva or tshuva. Right. And that's why he quotes specifically these two footnotes. Because there, what is it that's talking about? How do I know this guy has successfully done, or completely done tshuva when he breaks his dice, for example? That's with action. That's a deed.
Right.
So you have machshava, dibur, and maisa. Machshava of teshuva is the heartfelt feeling. Dibur, speech of teshuva, is the confession. And then the action is something which is going to indicate physically that this person has stopped doing this thing wrong. So the Rebbe comments and says that just as you have a mitzvah klal, you have explaining teshuva, that it's no mitzvah, or it's a mitzvah klalis, or it's a mitzvah which is pratis, and we base that on expressions of the soul. So this is the easiest way to understand this is actually according to Chassidus. Because teshuva, just as it's expressed in thought, speech, and action, is an expression of the soul. Because there's something called this that we're talking about, breaking the dice, for example. Later on, we're going to get to this concepts of something called tshuva tata and tshuva ilah, a lower level of tshuva and a higher level of tshuva.
Okay.
The lower level of tshuva, as he says at the bottom of the thing over here, the end of the very last words of this parak, if we get to it, is if he doesn't return from tshuva out of love, but from fear. Okay, what is he afraid of? He's afraid of getting smacked. Okay, someone told him that there's such a thing called Gehenna. Okay, and like the Alter Rebbe mentions, in quick passing in chapter 8, that a person who engages in Dvarim Betalim, so he gets, what do you call it? Not Chibudakela, Kafakela. His soul gets thrown around from one end of the spectrum to the other. They shake it out like an old rug to get the dust out. And then if a person does, speaks Lashon Hara, these type of things, they take it, they give a good beating to it, like they hang the rug up and they beat it out. Okay? And then if a person does something wrong where he gets, that's all really basically that he says over there. If a person does something wrong, he has to go to Gehenna, if he has Gehenna, Shal Eish, Gehenna, Shal Sheleg. These types of things, it's all just mentioned quickly in passing because we don't deal with these things in Chabad. We emphasize, do the right thing, and you won't have to worry what happens if you do the wrong thing. So, the there's a old joke that I heard from a Misnagid when I first became Frum.
Okay.
I'm putting this on the tape. Okay. I don't know if I told you. If I told you, you could stop. He's, oh yeah, we heard that one. It's back in chapter whatever. And people can refer back to what do you call it?
I joined it at 42.
Okay. So the so this is a guy dies, and they're showing him around heaven, right? So they show him the Gerer heaven, and they show him the Babaver heaven, and they show him the Panovitcher heaven, and they show him the Lakewood heaven, and they go past. He says, shh. Be very quiet. He says, what's the problem? He says, this is the Lubavitcher heaven. He says, okay, so why do we have to be quiet? He says, because they think they're the only ones up here.
Right.
Okay, so.
Indeed, yes.
So, the.
Don't worry. Don't
worry. Yeah. This was the same type of person that really tried to convince me to go, not to go to Morristown, but to go to a different yeshiva, yes, you know, indeed, so. Yes. Anyway, so if you worry about doing that, so if a person's worried about doing the wrong thing, so this is like this is an external expression of their heart. The fact that we could say that tshuva is no mitzvah is because tshuva affects actually the essence of a person's soul, one which is beyond thought, speech, and action. And he's going to talk later on that this idea of what tshuva really is it's an expression, and he talks about this in the Mittler Rebbe talks about this in Shari Tshuva at great length. I mean, it's a book about tshuva which is 2 inches thick. That tshuva is the acceptance of tshuva, the kapara, for example, because what are you doing when you're doing tshuva is you're trying, he's going to say in the next chapter, is you're trying to get back in with God. So whose decision ultimately is if your tshuva is successful or not?
God's.
It's God's.
Right.
How is it? Here it is, a person did something wrong. It says quite clearly, you're not allowed to do X, Y, and Z. And this guy did X, Y, and Z. He's in violation of God's will right directly. And what does he want? He wants to fill in the gap that he created because he transgressed it. So the godliness that has to be able to connect or fill in that gap has to be a higher level of teshuva than even God's will. Because God wanted you to do this or God didn't want you to do it. And he went and he did it or he didn't do it.
Right.
So he's in violation of God's will. So God's will can't say, okay, I want you back, because he violated it.
Yeah,
it has to be a higher level than even God's will. It's called the level in Hebrew, it's called the Baal HaRatzon, the one whose will it is. Because, for example, you have your will, And as you say, I want, there's the want, and then but then there's the I.
The I.
The I is higher than the want.
The I of the want, right.
So the Hashem, so to speak, has this I also. Mm. So our tshuva, in order for it to enact this kapara, right, to be effective, has to tap into the very essential levels of Elokus.
Right.
And if that be the case, then it affects the very essential levels of our neshama, that level of our neshama which is above doing mitzvahs.
Right.
Because believe it or not, there's a level of neshama that doesn't relate to our body, not to the world, not at all. And it refers to the essence of our soul. Mm-hmm. Okay? But then you could say, just like, you take a look at the heart. The heart is called in the medieval medical books, Lahavdil, and in many of the Jewish writings of the same time, that there are three kings in the body. Mm. You have the brain, the heart, and the liver. And each one is in control, you might say. These are three major organs. So the heart is a specific organ in itself, but the heart's function is to supply the needs of every limb in the body.
Right.
So that's why we call it a general organ. We call it a king. Mm. So therefore we refer to it also as the mitzvah, which is done with the heart, which is teshuvah, is a general mitzvah that affects all mitzvahs, like the Minchasina wants to say, like the Rambam wants to say.
All right.
And then you could say, we'll take it one step further, that the heart is its own thing. Mm. The heart is a muscle the size of your fist. And what does it do? It pumps. Okay? It's not thinking, you know, I really would like to supply to blood to that guy's little pinky toe.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not thinking anything. It doesn't have a brain. It's just the heart. It's just a muscle.
Right.
Okay, so that be the case, then it's a specific organ. So if that be the case, then there is a relationship to a specific tshuva as a specific mitzvah. Okay? And so the Alter Rebbe therefore says, Hine mitzvah a tshuva min haTorah. The mitzvah, not we're talking generally, not talking philosophy, because this is in this section here, we're talking about what's tshuva according to Nigla. So that's why we have this whole Nigla pilpul over here going on. Okay? Dahainu. That means to say, when it says, now he's going to explain. Azivas hachet bilvad requires two things. The first thing over here is that a person has to feel sorry for what he did till now.
Hmm.
What seems mashma from the Gemara, was implied from the Gemara and brought that into Shulchan Aruch, is I don't have to feel sorry for what I did till now. I just have to break my dice. If I break my dice from now on, my winnings that I won till now, that was great stuff. I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
I made a lot of money.
No regrets.
I'm very happy. No regrets. From now on, I'm not going to do it anymore. Why? Because I want to be considered a kosher person. I don't like being called a not kosher person. So from now on, I'll be called a kosher person.
Mm.
By me, if it would be, for example, that a guy would give testimony in a court of law who's a professional gambler.
Mm.
And they would disqualify his testimony. And then because they disqualify his testimony, he says, you know what? I'm giving up gambling from now on. That's it. I'm not doing any more gambling. Does that retroactively make his testimony from before good?
I would say no.
No, it doesn't. Because at the time that he gave that testimony, he was not a kosher person.
Correct.
Concept of time.
Okay. There's also this idea of, now, how long does it take to do tshuva? It's not a fair question, because there is a Mishnah in Kiddushin that stipulates that if a person gets married on condition, fill in the blank, and the condition is not met, the marriage is null and void.
Sometimes.
And there are Mishnahs that says if he marries her on condition that his name is Yosef, and it turns out that his name is Yitzchok, and he says, Hariat Mekudeshes Li Almanash to Shmi Yosef. I'm marrying you on condition with this ring. I'm marrying you with this ring on condition that my name is Yosef. And his name is Yitzchok. They are not married. And there's a whole list of things. If he says, I'm marrying you on condition that I'm rich and he's poor. If I marry on condition that I'm poor and he's rich. If I marry on condition that I'm a city dweller and he's a farm person. If you marry on condition that I'm a farm person and I'm a city person. If the conditions of what he's saying is not met, there is no marriage. Save for if he gets married on condition that I am a tzaddik gomer. And it turns out that he is a Russia gomer. They're still married. Why? Because as he was putting the ring on her finger and saying to her, "Hari at mekudeshes li betobazu al menas she'ani tzadik gomer," he could have been aroused to thoughts of tshuva out of a love for Hashem, that he really felt a desire to get closer to Hashem, not just closer to this babe. And therefore, all of his misdeeds have been converted to mitzvahs.
Right.
As it says that a person who does tshuva out of love, his zdainais nasa like his zachiyos, his intentional sins are counted as merits. Because he, and he's going to talk about this later, because it is the misdeed itself which has propelled him away and made him feel the distance from where he was that he should want to get closer to Hashem. So therefore it says that if a person, a Baal Tshuva, stands on a higher level than a Tzadik Gomer, because a Baal Tshuva understands what it means to be away from Hashem, and that understanding of what it means to be away from Hashem has tightened up his relationship with Hashem on a greater level than a Tzadik.
Right.
So in that instance, it's possible that a person could do Tshuva
instantaneously. Right. Incredible.
Okay? And we've mentioned this before, because the classic example in the Gemara is with Elazar ben Dodai. Elazar ben Dodai had an advocation. He wanted to transgress every one of the commandments. That's what he wanted to do with his life. And it happened that he crossed four rivers on a Shabbos in order to go rape a woman. And she looked at him in the eye and said, "Elazar ben Dodai, you have no place in the world to come." And it was a slap of in the face. It was getting thrown with cold water right in the face. And he sat down on a log and he cried until he died. So he had such remorse for all the things that he had done that he died. And when he came up to heaven, a voice rang out from the heavens saying, "Elazar ben Dodai has acquired in one moment a place in the world to come." And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi heard this and said, "It's not fair. I'm working my whole entire life for what he got in one moment."
Right.
So it is possible. So tshuva is not a time thing.
No.
It may be that what it is it's like a true expression. When is it that you have a true expression? So there is a story involving the Baal Shem Tov. Before the Baal Shem Tov passed away, he assigned all of his students jobs. You ever heard this story?
No.
So there's a certain Reb Chaim that he told him that he wants him to be a professional Baal Shem Tov storyteller.
Oh, yes.
You remember this story?
Yeah, go ahead. It's no. Great story.
Okay. So he's going around, and he's going all over hill and dale and out and about and up and down, and he's telling stories.
Right.
And how much money is he making? He's not making the big bucks. This is not what you'd call something that was a lucrative profession. Because there he'd be in the marketplace, and he would tell a really cute Baal Shem Tov story, pass around the hat, and he'd get a couple of pennies.
Yeah, yeah. Don't spend this all in one spot.
Exactly. Okay, so he pulls up into a town, and he hears that there's a certain landowner that will give a ruble for every Baal Shem Tov story that you could tell.
Right.
And he said, "I'm cleaning up."
Yeah.
I know thousands of Baal Shem Tov stories.
Right.
Okay, this is it. I made my, I'm going to do this guy and I'm going to retire.
Yeah.
Okay? So he gets in, he tells the Baal Abbas, he's a professional Baal Shem Tov storyteller.
Yeah.
Can he come and spend Shabbos with him? The guy says, "Great, that's wonderful."
Sure.
It's a terrific thing, terrific, good. Okay, so Friday night, they come home from shul, he sits down, they have the fish, the salad, whatever they have over there, it's all very nice. They're bringing out the soup, so the host tells the guest, "Okay,
no.
Tell us a Baal Shem Tov story." And he draws a blank. Just absolutely couldn't think. He said, this has never happened to me in my life. I am absolutely blank. I cannot remember a single story. So the host says, don't worry about it. You know, you're tired. It's been a long day. Tomorrow you'll have an opportunity. You know, you have the next day. The next day, by the cholent, they have the fish, the salad, they bring out the cholent. Okay, tell us a story. Nothing. Just totally says, I really am very sorry, but I can't think of a single story. So, okay, fine. There was shalashudas. So he says, a shalashudas. We have, it comes to shul, and they have a thing of it, the herring and the bread and the whole thing over there, and the schnapps, and he lets the rabbi know that this is a professional Baal Shem Tov story, and he's sponsoring the shalashudas, allow this guy to speak, and he gets there, and everybody turns to him and says, okay, let's hear a Baal Shem Tov story. Yeah, yeah. And he's,
nice wedding we're having.
He can't remember. Malava Malka, the same thing happens. By breakfast the next morning, he says, maybe a little something. He says, I'm really very sorry. I mean, this is my golden opportunity. I could have cleaned up, but obviously this is something that's going on over here, and I can't remember. And he says, thank you very much. And he takes his leave, and the guy says, you know, whatever, here's a couple of rubles. Have a nice day, you know. He's walking down the steps. He says, wait a minute. I just remembered a story. He says, one story I can at least tell you. It's not the best story, but it's a story. He says, we were once traveling to a certain point with the Rebbe, with the Baal Shem Tov. And we stopped in a place, and there was only 9 people at this inn. Mm-hmm. And it was for Shabbos. And the Baal Shem Tov wanted a minion. So he said, he asked the innkeeper, are there any Jews? He says, there's one other Jew, he's not from. You know, I'm mixing up, there's two different stories. In one story, the guy dies at the end of Yom Kippur. That's not this story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't remember exactly. And that's where I think that was a professor in an anti-Semite, a university, and he screams, Hashem Hu Elokim, and he dies at the end of the story. That's not this story.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, what happens is they call this guy, and he's not religious, and he sits there and davening, and they give him, the Baal Shem Tov calls him and gives him a talis, and he sits down in the back of the room, and the whole time, the whole Shabbos, he just sits there and he's crying. And then, after Shabbos, he asked the Baal Shem Tov if he could have a yechidus. And he went to the yechidus, and they heard crying and this and back and forth, and suddenly it was quiet for quite a long time. And the guy came out, and he was totally and completely, after 2 hours, you could see he was like totally spent. He was wasted.
Yeah.
And he went on his way. And he said, you don't have to pay me for such a story. It doesn't show anything about the Baal Shem Tov's greatness. And I don't know what happened to the guy. And in the meantime, he sees that the guy, the landowner, is just beaming. And he says, I was that guy. And in that yechidus, I asked the Baal Shem Tov, how am I going to do tshuva? And the Baal Shem Tov laid out a whole course of action for me to do tshuva. Some people just get it easy, you know? You gotta have the Baal Shem Tov plan your life for you.
There you go.
And I said to ask the Baal Shem Tov, how am I going to know that my tshuva has been accepted? So he says, when one of my talmidim will come to you and tell you this story about you being here, you will know that Hashem has accepted your tshuva. So on Friday night, when you came and you told me that you're a professional Baal Shem Tov storyteller, I said, this is it. This guy's going to tell stories, and one of the stories he's going to tell is going to be about me. This is it. Boy, oh boy, yay, yippee, I'm off the hook. And then, after the fish, you couldn't tell the story. I was devastated. And I said, it must be that I'm at the cusp, and I really have to give it the final push. And the same thing, Shabbos day, Shalashudas, Maitzeh Shabbos, I was beside myself. I cried the whole night. And then, now that you tell me this story, so I know my tshuva has been accepted. And he gave him when I said, come with me, he went to the safe, he took out a big bag of money, and said, you can now retire and live happily ever after. And they all lived happily after, which is how the old Hasidic stories end. Okay? So, the tshuva doesn't take up any time.
Right.
It's not
a time quality.
Even if you're right. Going to say, for sure, if you're going to say it's a central mitzvah, so essence is beyond time and space.
Right.
And for sure, if you're going to say that it's a mitzvah klalus, that you don't even have to do it unless... But even if it's you say it's a specific thing, and it's a specifically related, and this is something that a person's got to do, you don't have to wait years to do tshuva.
Right.
You can do tshuva in a blink of an eye.
Yeah.
As we know, the Rebbe quoted quite often,
that
how long is it going to take Mashiach to get here? The blink of an eye.
Hmm.
It's taken him already 3,000 years and change. But Mashiach's coming is not going to be, we're not going to get eased into the Messianic era. You're going to blink, you're going to open up your eyes, and you're going to be witnessing a new reality. That's why the Friedeker Rebbe had the motto, La'alter l'tshuva, la'alter l'geula. As soon as you do tshuva, that's how soon Mashiach is going to come. Because just as you can do tshuva in the blink of an eye, Mashiach could come in the blink of an eye as well. And we'll have to get up to the dot. The Hainu. Let's at least get up to the dot. Shigamar b'li by b'lev shalom l'bal yashuv oid l'chsila, that he resolves in his heart. That's what he says over here, that shuv is specific. This ties back to the idea of the mitzvah, the specific mitzvah. He does the mitzvah of tshuva. Just like you do the mitzvah of tzedakah with your hand, you perform the mitzvah of tshuva with your heart.
Right.
That he's gomer b'libay b'lev shalom.
Mm.
Which you could say, wait a minute, there's other mitzvahs that are done in the heart. You have love of Hashem and fear of Hashem. So love of Hashem happens to be done with the right side of the heart. And fear of Hashem happens to be done with the left side of the heart. Tshuva is done, you don't even have to pardon the expression, wholeheartedly.
Uh-huh. Okay. Indeed.
Leval Yashuv Eilich Sila, to return ever again to his stupidity. Limrid Malchusa Yizborach, to rebel against Hashem's kingdom. V'loyaver oid mitzvahs hamelech and chaser sholem, and never ever to again to transgress the commandments of the king, God forbid. Hang the mitzvahs asay, hang the mitzvahs loisasay. Whether you're talking about a positive commandment or whether you're talking about a negative commandment. He uses some very strong lashonis over here. He calls it, says, not to confuse ever again l'chsila. Why does he use the expression foolishness? Maybe you want to say it's not a harsh enough word. Mm-hmm. A person who sins is a fool. You say a person who it's l'rishos, he's going to resolve never to go back to his wickedness.
Mm.
Why does he call it foolishness? Two reasons. It says that a person doesn't do true. A person won't do a sin. Elohim came nichnas baruch shtus. He's overtaken with temporary insanity. He becomes an idiot. And then also, the Yetzirah is referred to as a melech zaken uksil, an old foolish king. That, therefore, this being that what? Because it's stupidity. For a person to do something which willingly, knowingly, cuts them off from their life force, is crazy. It's mishugas mamish. If I tell you, here, what's in this cup is poison and it will kill you. By the way, it tastes very good. Smell it. You see, it smells. Oh, it smells delicious. It's poison. It will kill you. It tastes delicious. And you taste it and you say, yeah, it tastes delicious. And drink the whole thing down. What are you? Dead.
Death.
You're crazy. You're stupid for doing such a thing.
Well,
only because what would do such a thing? A person would have to say, you know, it's to taste so good. How could it be poison? That's really what the person says. It tastes so good. How could it hurt me?
Uh-huh.
So every Aveira, illegal, immoral, or fattening, it tastes so good. It's so delicious. It's such a wonderful experience. How could it be so bad that it's going to cut me off from Hashem? The answer is, it's poison. The answer, yes, it will. So that's what happens now. He says that what is it that he's doing? That he's doing tshuva so that he never rebels against Hashem's kingdom. Referring to Hashem specifically is our relationship in this part as we are servants and Hashem is king. We're not talking about here like, you know, so you have im kabanim, im ka'avanim, as he says in Yom Kippur, you know, that if we're like children, if we're like slaves, you got to take care of us either way. Because the relationship with a father and a child is such that the son doesn't go against the will of the father out of respect, but there's also a love relationship over there, which covers over a lot of things. The father has a tendency to be overly forgiving because it's my son. Whereas the king, he says here, uses the word malchuso specifically. Kings aren't forgiving. You rebel against the king, you lead a coup against the king, he's not going to go, oh, I love you so much. Oh,
so nice. Bye.
You know, for sure you feel sorry that you led this rebellion against me. Of course. No.
It's not a problem.
Okay, so the king, that's why he uses the example king, because a person should understand our relationship with Hashem is also very formal. It's very informal. It's a very loving relationship. Hashem is our father. Hashem is us, which he says back in chapter 32. Mm-hmm. And all those good things about it. But we have this other relationship also. So this person is resolving, he's saying, you know, I'm going to, at this point, since I know that I mucked up, and the only reason why I mucked up is because I thought it wouldn't have any effect on my relationship with Hashem, and I see now from my part that it does, so therefore from now on I'm going to treat Hashem as my king. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say me and king were me and Hashem are lovey-dovey at this point. I'm going to show Hashem some respect. Mm. And I am not going to transgress the will of the king. I am not going to lead a coup against Hashem. Whether in positive commandments or in negative commandments. And this then to be continued.